You're listening to Deeper Magic.
I've never led us in before. I don't know how to lead us in.
So have you actually never done this?
Or if I have, it's been a minute.
Well, okay, so I will say that when I first sat down to ever do anything in broadcast radio.
Yeah.
The person that I sat across the desk from, and we are in these big radio studios, and she had been a longtime host. I think she'd even had been a television personality of some kind. And I watched her lead in, and two things about it were really interesting because one, I was so intimidated by the fact that she could just launch in to a show altogether, but she completely messed up the first time. So there should be some sort of confidence. Now we were taping it. It wasn't live at this point,
but neither are we.
Yeah. Well, that's fair.
Take two.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really encouraging that she was not able to just like roll into it. And so she didn't swear because it was a Christian radio thing. I will say when I was doing Minnesota Twins radio and he had to do the same thing and he had like 9 Emmys in the industry. So this was a really big time national figure that he was the first one to take me kind of under his wing to do radio. He would swear when he would mess all of that up. So even all of the very best that have done it forever would say they mess up on the way in. And I guess I already said the second thing. I was so intimidated. And my first maybe like 2 months of doing live radio, the stupid light would go red. And I felt like I had the worst intros ever for 2 months. Every day, 5 days a week, I just stumbled into the intro and then it was fine. So this is, but this is your first shot.
I hit record and it went like one, like I did like the 3 second count in. And then I opened my mouth to be like, hi, welcome back to Deeper Magic. And I was like, that sounds so stupid. I can't do that. What are you talking about? And then my whole brain went blank. And I have not been like nervous recording a podcast episode since probably like a month into us recording.
From season
one. Month was like weird to get into. And then like after that, I've been totally fine. Haven't thought about it at all. But all of a sudden leading in, my whole brain went blank and my heart started beating so fast. And then I was like, Deeper Magic, Peter.
It's so funny. It is literally the hardest thing to do in any kind of radio. Okay. Yeah.
So hi, welcome back to Deeper Magic. I'm Anna. This is Peter. Say hi, Peter.
Hi, Peter.
This is really weird and I don't like it. And I think you should lead in from now on.
Okay. Well, no, I'm going to make you do this at least. Well, no, I can't make you do it. You're a grown adult woman. I can't make you do anything.
It's your turn to lead in and we're just going to sit here in silence for an hour and a half.
Very fair. But you are going to kind of lead this podcast a little bit more than I do, just in the sense of asking some of the questions, because we talked about this. Mm-hmm. It's on the heels of Easter weekend.
Yep.
And it was the first time that I ever had a chance to lead a Good Friday service in my 30 years or so of ministry. So we thought it might be good to do a couple things, just talk about that. But then we're actually going to play the clip of the 25 or so minute Good Friday service, not because I'm trying to make a big name for myself or, you know, it was just an interesting experience to give it. And the feedback was interesting. I know we'll talk about that as well.
Yeah. And it was interesting for me too, to like sit and watch you give the Good Friday service, because Easter weekend is, I think honestly, my favorite like part of Christianity consistently every year. And even before I felt like I had a solid relationship with God, there was just something about Easter weekend that I loved so much. And this one was really special because this was my first Easter weekend since being baptized.
Which we haven't talked about yet on Easter, on Deeper Magic, I don't think, have we? Okay. We've just done the two episodes so far. This is episode 3.
Mm-hmm.
So, well,
so
let's
go back and do
we definitely need to go back to
while.
Your baptism a bit. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it was my first Easter since being baptized, and that was really amazing. And I think there's an element for me with like Good Friday of, and I mean, you know this about me, that I push so hard against the Christian idea of like, we suck and we're lowly worms and God hates us. And like, and I think that's something I hear so much throughout the year, like going to church or going to, we're like talking to other Christians or listening to sermons or whatever. And it's in an idea that I push back against so much. But there's a different element about Good Friday, which I think is so interesting, because I feel like it is the opportunity for people to convey that message. Like that is maybe the most fitting story to convey that message, is the Good Friday moment. And it's one that I don't hear.
Mm.
I hear stories of grace. I hear stories of compassion. I hear stories of like unbelievable gratefulness and praise to God on Good Friday, which is the moment where you would expect people to be like, yeah, and you didn't deserve it and God hates you.
Right.
And it's like, but I just don't hear that on Good Friday. And so there's something, it feels like closer to my understanding of my relationship with God and my relationship with Jesus is interesting that people tend to tap into that on Good Friday. But I really appreciated the message that you came in with. It was also just an element of sweetness to have you be the one doing the Good Friday service on my first Easter after baptism. Yeah, like that was really, lovely as
really
well.
Really sweet. Yeah.
But you kind of did something interesting. You want to talk about like kind of your process for how you crafted your sermon? Cause it was not a 3-point, alliteration. Is that
yeah,
it
that's
is?
The right yeah, way. It's not right. The typical way of doing stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really evolved certainly from when the pastor of the church asked me to give it and felt like a real honor to do so, but I didn't for sure know what to do with it. But I think to your point, first of all, just about this message of oftentimes we hear, hey, we're the lowly worms. We're the ones that nailed Jesus to the cross, you know, all of this. And I think sometimes, unfortunately, it comes from what I would think is a serious theological misunderstanding.
Yeah.
That when the Bible talks about Jesus paying a price, you have to answer the question, who did he pay the price to, or what was the price? And a lot of people just sort of without thinking about it, make the connection and say, well, the price was paid to God, as if there was some sort of cosmic debt that was owed. And somehow there was some sort
God
of currency
sitting up there with his calculator.
Right. And Jesus had enough currency, and apparently his currency was blood that was able to fill the bank account of God's cosmic debt and to a place that we could be reconciled or something. And we don't have enough time to pivot into that conversation about when did that theology start. But I think biblically speaking, the price that Jesus paid was simply the same price that we've been paying, the consequences, meaning that our choice to disconnect from God leads to consequences of misery and despair and pain and turmoil and death and all of that. So Jesus wasn't paying a debt to God or a price to God. He was just simply paying the same price that we were paying.
Yeah.
You know, as if you were paying the price for running out in the street when you shouldn't have and got hit by a car and now you're experiencing some broken limbs. I wouldn't be then paying the hospital for your prices if the hospital is God. If I wanted to pay the same price you were paying, I'd run out in the street and get hit by a car.
Right.
Now, the difference is Jesus was paying a price that he didn't actually do. So he decided to identify and enter into our price. So I really tried to weave that part into the message. So it wasn't this idea of big cosmic angry God and Jesus filling up his bank account with blood.
Well, and it's also not the idea of like to go with the, if I run out in the street, the price that I pay for that is getting hit by a car. It's also not you standing behind me as my dad and I run out into the street and you shove me into a car and you go, you lowly worm.
Right, exactly.
It's not that at all. It's just the natural consequences of my actions.
Exactly.
It's not like some sort of cosmic punishment from God.
Totally. So then from there, the reason why I originally got asked to do it is I was telling the lead pastor of this church a little bit about how we handle Sunday nights as a family or how we have for the last 18 or so months where we gather together. This was very much under the direction of your mom to help us as a family get started and involve some other people as well. You guys have all spoken into it. And now it has become a time on Sundays where it's called Havdalah, which is the ancient Jewish practice pre-Jesus of how they would celebrate Sabbath. And as I explained to him how we are celebrating Sabbath, but then also bringing Messiah into that and communion, and how do we practice this meal together and this ritual together, the lead pastor was very compelled by this. And he said, I would really like for you to bring some of that to Good Friday, because there was this connection of, at the end of Havdalah in the Old Testament, they would blow out the candle. And that candle that was lit prior on Havdalah was the only day of the week that they lit this special candle. And the reason why they blew it out at the end of Havdalah and Sabbath was because the candle was for Messiah, and Messiah was not yet in the world. And so the light was in the world during Sabbath, but then the light was not in the world the other 6 days of the week in the same kind of way, because Messiah had not yet come. And when I shared that with him, that we, in our practice on Sunday evenings, blow out the candle as they would have at the end of Havdalah in the Old Testament, but then we relight the candle, and it's very much an Easter candle at that moment, because we do believe Messiah has come into the world, and then we share communion from all of that. Again, he was very compelled by that. I think a lot of people are. I certainly am as well. So it started with that, but then I started thinking about it. I thought, well, how in the world do I give any context for Havdalah without telling a little bit more of the Old Testament context of the story? And then as I started talking about the Old Testament, I was like, well, how do I say anything about the parting of the Red Sea and the development of the community at Sinai, or maybe taking the promised land with Joshua, without at least giving a little bit of history of what happened with Abraham? And then it just turned into this massive thing of, well, why don't I just tell the story from Genesis 3 to Jesus dying on the cross? And from there, it just became this wonderful honor to just puzzle out the entire story.
Well, and part of what you and I were talking about earlier is that as I am preparing to start leading some of the Hebrew studies, some of which we've done similar things with on the podcast already, like when we did our Hagar series and when we've had Alan or Holly and Noah on, just some of that idea of like teaching and how you do that and digging into the Hebrew scriptures. As I've been preparing to figure out how to kind of lead those in person, one of the things that I was doing was I was sitting down and coming up with these notes of like, here are the basic things that I want to cover that is like groundwork understanding before we can even get into any kind of study. And one of the things that I was talking a little bit about was the idea of everything in the Bible is connected, and trying to read something in the New Testament without having the context of the Old Testament is like trying to pick up book 12 of like a 15 book series and read one sentence or one chapter of book 12 out of context and be like, yeah, I understand what's going on here. And you're like, no, you don't. You've missed the first 11 books. Like, what are you talking about? And it's interesting because part of as I've been prepping, I've been asking around people who are going to be in the room with me. And it's ranging from people who are like, oh yeah, I totally know what you're talking about, to people where I'm like, do you know who Moses is? And they're like, kinda. And I had thought about it and I realized kind of before doing Hebrew studies with Alan and Noah growing up, before we knew Holly even, my context for the Old Testament was like VeggieTales.
Yeah.
It was sure. It was David and Goliath.
It's a solid teacher. Let's just be like honest.
Trying to blow an air pass through a tray of water in Sunday school to prove that I was not God because I couldn't even part the waters in a baking tray, much less part a sea. So it's like that was all the context for the Old Testament.
Yeah, and I hardly think you're alone with that. And talk more about this maybe just in a minute. But again, it was some of the most feedback that I got, which is part of why I thought it might be interesting to share it through our Deeper Magic podcast, because people said the service was beautiful, and the music that we had with it, the musician or the worship leaders at this particular church are unusual in the standpoint that I just, they really do want to lead worship. They're not just gigging. They're not there to make a buck. They really did care about leading it. So they just set up this beautiful context, and the environment was great. So the service itself was, I think, the right kind of atmosphere for it. But then also too, the message was something that was going to leave us in a place somewhat of desolation. You can't artificially make it happen because we all know the end of the story, but I didn't want to leave everybody with the end of the story that he's been risen. I really wanted all of us to feel myself. And I really felt the weight of Jesus's death then in terms of what he did and what he had to walk through to accomplish that. So I got a lot of feedback on that level, but the more interesting to me feedback that I got was how many people that, like you just said, were maybe have been in church for 30, 40 years, some of them, and have never really heard the story connected in that way. They just really appreciated the history and how God was protecting the seed of his promise all the way through the Old Testament. And these stories now have context. And it's pretty consistent with what I find in my classes at school where I teach now. Even ministry students, when I ask them to fill in a specific Bible passage as we're kind of going Socratically back and forth in the classroom, sometimes I will say something like, so finish the passage for me. Yeah. Where our sin abounds, what abounds all the more? Grace. And you would say grace. Mm-hmm. But I would say maybe 5 of the 25 to 30 of them would hazard even a guess that grace fills in the gap on that one. And the rest of them kind of sit there and they wonder. And it just, I'm not saying just bad or good. It just has been a big change that I've seen is that we don't have as much biblical familiarity as we once did. So it feels like this big mysterious book. And then you crack it open to your point in some random page and try to pull out a verse without having any idea of what's going on.
In the English, by the way, which is all like 35,000 layers of what's going on in the Hebrew.
Yeah.
It's like, no wonder people feel so lost and so disconnected from their faith and their community and from God and from themselves is because we just aren't equipping people to understand. It's like handing somebody a chainsaw and being like, great, now you have everything that you need to do to go, I don't know, I was going to say like, what's the lumberjack?
Yeah, lumberjack.
I couldn't think of the word. I was like, nope, no words in my brain. I was thinking woodcutter.
Yeah, Well, woodcutter would work too.
Yeah, I suppose. But it's like handing somebody a chainsaw and being like, now you know everything you need to know to be a lumberjack. And you're like, I don't, no, I don't actually.
It's fine. That, as the aptness of that example, maybe you're not aware of, but, okay. but I have a chainsaw for the first time in my life, the last couple of years. And so we had a fairly sizable dead tree in our backyard and we haven't had a lot of snow in Minnesota this year. So I thought I'll start getting the backyard prepped to seed and to do some planting that your mom and I want to do. And I thought I can take down this tree. No, I managed to take it down, but let's just say I probably could have used some tutorials before all of that. The fact it was probably closer than I would like to admit to falling in a direction that I wouldn't have wanted it to fall. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. And now that's a silly, stupid example analogy, but it works in the sense of how often we then end up in scripture, not knowing what we're doing, understandably so. And some meaning falls where we don't intend it to fall or we don't even know what's going on, right, at that time. Hey, so did you see how I tied that together?
Maybe I am an English major.
Maybe you are. Maybe you are.
Baby.
So, I mean, yes, for sure. I just, it was fun to hear people talk about just their appreciation. And something you brought up that I thought was interesting is that maybe we should do a second episode after this. Not that I'm going to do a new talk about Easter or something like that.
Oh, I expect you to do that.
It took me like 20 hours to do this talk.
I know.
So, maybe we just at least then make a connection and say, so what happened after the desolation of the cross?
You can just plagiarize Kevin's one. Like, I could. That's fine.
Kevin's was really good.
There's nothing.
Yeah, and I really appreciated how the pastor of the church, Kevin Myers, his name followed up by telling the story again on that Sunday. I have to talk to him later this week because I did adapt or evolve the sermon a little bit. When he saw me, he said that was just amazing. He said, but I was going to kind of tell the story too. So,
So
to his eternal credit, he told the story from a slightly different angle, and it was lovely. It was absolutely lovely then. And he did such a good job of tying it in.
The resurrection and Revelation and Genesis.
Yes,
right?
Which was brilliant. And I love how what he did is he took us from Genesis to the cross, and then he went to Revelation to see the end of the story. And then he came back and positioned the resurrection in light of the end of the story. Mm-hmm. And it just made a lot of sense. So, well, and it was great to have you there. Maybe we can just wrap up with this question before we play it's about 25 minutes or so that people can listen to. And as you were sitting there, I'm just curious. Were there things that stood out for you as you were listening to part of this arcing story of the fall to the crucifixion?
Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that I have always loved in looking at scripture is the idea of patterns or of cycles and the idea that the story repeats itself over and over and you kind of come to the same moments again and again where you are faced with the same choice that somebody else hundreds of years before made a different choice. And now you are faced with that same choice again and you can choose if you're going to go with the same thing or if you're going to go with something different. And so even part of it was the idea of like the Israelites having 400 years in slavery in Egypt. And then the idea of there being 400 years between what the last prophet
Malachi,
Malachi and the birth of Jesus. And so the idea of this 400 years of silence, this 400 years of kind of slavery and the promised land has kind of fallen apart and the people are scattered. And so kind of, again, that mirroring. But part of what I was thinking about with that was when you started talking about, Mary and Elizabeth, and Mary is pregnant with Jesus and Elizabeth is pregnant with John. And then all of a sudden it kind of clicked for me in this moment where I was like, oh, after 400 years of nothing, 400 years of silence and the people have been scattered and no one is hearing from God and the prophets are gone and the promised land has fallen. It's 400 years of nothing. And this teenager is told that she is now pregnant with God incarnate, which is insane. And she goes to speak to her cousin about it and be like, what the heck is going on? And her cousin is like, guess what? I'm pregnant with the last prophet. And it's this beautiful moment where I realized I was like, oh, this is one of those moments. And it ties into the Seder meal that we did earlier this week, because we do a Seder every year. And it's kind of a messianic Seder, which I really love. And there's a section of it. Is it Dayanu?
Yeah.
Where it says it would have been sufficient.
Yes,
is what that
right.
means. And so it's the whole idea of going through the Exodus story and being like, if God had only done this and not this, Dayanu, it would have been sufficient, right? And I had this moment where it was like, oh, if God had only had Mary been pregnant with Jesus and Elizabeth been pregnant with John, it would have been sufficient. but he did so much more for them in that moment out of his grace and his love that he had them know each other. He had them be cousins and friends who loved each other and cared about each other so deeply and so dearly that in that moment, after 400 years of nothing, you'd be like, I'm insane. Like, I don't know. I'm hallucinating things. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. And then to have somebody that you love and care about so deeply be like, no, you're right, because I heard it too. It, like, the graciousness and the love and the mercy and, like, togetherness that God brought into that moment where he was like, okay, and you two know each other because nobody else is going to believe you, is so beautiful.
Yeah, when you pointed that out, I had literally had never even thought of that connection before, which again, it's part of the fun of studying scripture together like this.
Absolutely.
Because we might be able to say people don't have a ton of familiarity with scripture these days, but even like going through it, in theory, I'm supposed to be studying and teaching scripture, and you're learning how to do this now too for these 20, 30 years. And I just, every time I even look at it, something I've never even considered before has taken shape. And that was very much the experience for me. And so I love the connection that you teased out there, that after all of this silence, he didn't just do some person up in the north of the tribe of Dan or something like that. Yeah. And some other person way down in the south, they're intimately connected, especially because he was going to be bringing Mary into this as this young, very, very vulnerable teenage girl to surround her or to give her the coverage of Elizabeth was a really just a beautiful act of grace. So appreciative that you brought that up.
Well, and there's a beauty then in the connection between Jesus and John with everything that Jesus has to go through to have his cousin John be the one who's standing behind him saying, this is the Messiah all along the way. Cause then there's that connection. They grew up together. They knew each other. And all along the way, John is then that person that Jesus can lean on and vice versa.
Yeah, for sure. No, well said. Well, should we go ahead and head into the service? Thanks for talking through this a little bit. And do you want to just give a special shout out to the entire team at Westgate Church, in which I was able to give this sermon? They're very helpful in giving us the footage of the sermon itself, and appreciative of the lead pastor, Kevin Meyer, giving me the space to do this, but also again to the beautiful message with which he followed up on the Resurrection Sunday and the whole team there. So thanks to everybody for listening to Deeper Magic. Is it okay that I sign us off? Or do you, since now you're...
Please do. Don't make me do this.
That's great. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Is Auroras of Saturn by Music L Files. You can head on over to filmmusic.io and find that there. All licensed under Creative Commons 4.0.